This year has had many, many surprises, hasn't it? And all thanks to COVID-19, many people will face workplace redundancies. Can be a really stressful time, regardless of your financial position. And I'd like to break it down, how financial advisors can help someone who may be in this position. Let's talk to Lachlan Harvey and Brenton Meagle from Goldsborough Financial Services. Gentlemen, lovely to have your company on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. How are you?
Terrific, thank you, Jade.
Going well, thank you, Jade.
That's great. Now, if you've got a question, a finance question for the boys, call us now on 8223 0000. We are speaking with Lachlan Harvey and Brenton Meagle from Goldsborough Financial Services, and I'd just like to emphasise that any comments should not be accepted as direct advice and acted upon. We do suggest you contact either of the advisors to discuss your personal situation. But if you've got any finance questions at the moment, any advice, give us a buzz. Guys, I'd really like to ask about redundancies. It seems like every day we open the paper and more stores or businesses are closing down. I mean, let's just start with the basics. What does it mean to be made redundant?
In simple terms, a redundancy is where your position is being made redundant. And that's quite different to your workplace firing you or, for instance, your workplace saying that you're not required in any other way. It's your job itself that's being made redundant, and that's going to be increasingly common in 2020. Unfortunately, the JobKeeper program, which is due to wind up in September, has been keeping many businesses afloat. Mm. And one would expect that if that does wind up and the economy is still struggling at that time, which I can only imagine that it would be, that a lot of people will be looking at the possibility of either voluntary or forced redundancy.
So what if someone is a casual employee?
So if you're a casual employee, there are actually no redundancy provisions for casuals. Casual employees, as a rule, are paid a higher hourly rate than perhaps someone who is either a full-time or a part-time permanent employee of an organisation. But it also means that they don't get things like sick leave as a rule or annual leave, long service leave provisions and that. So casual employees are exempt from the redundancy situation. And I suspect that there would be a lot of people, particularly probably in the hospitality type industries, where they would be employed as casuals rather than as, you know, permanent or permanent part-time employees. So it does make things a little more difficult. The other thing to note is if you've been an employee for less than 12 months, then there is no provision for a redundancy payment if your position's made redundant. So a redundancy is not in every case when you lose your job. As Lachlan said, it's when the position that you are working in is gone and you're not a casual, you've been there more than 12 months.
Yeah, so all employers are going to treat this a little bit differently. For instance, Brenton mentioned for people that have been employed for less than 12 months, the redundancy package doesn't apply. Mm. And that's also the case for smaller employers, under 15 employees. No redundancy is required to be paid. They may pay a redundancy package, but no redundancy package would be required to be paid. But if you are employed on a part-time or full-time basis and you have long service leave entitlements and annual leave, you should fully expect that they would be paid out if your job's being made redundant. Sick leave, not so much. Very few employers would be required to pay out any unused sick leave as part of a redundancy package. There are a few that might have that as part of their enterprise bargaining agreement, but typically sick leave, you kind of lose it when you leave your job anyway.
If you've got a finance question for the boys, call now 8223 0000. And of course, this is really personal stuff, you know, talking about your job. So if you want to remain nameless, that is completely fine with us as well. What role can financial planners play for someone who may be being made redundant?
Yeah, Joe, I think there is a really valuable role for financial planners to play here. Everyone's individual situation is going to be unique because we all come from a different starting point in terms of our own financial position and also our personal circumstances, whether we're part of a couple, family relationships and things like that. So everyone's situation is going to look a little bit different, but the sorts of things that financial planners will ask of people that come to see them will be bring in as much information as you can about your financial position, because that's really what we're interested in, is what does the big picture look like? So part of our role is to assess your overall financial position.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes things like taking a list of what your assets are, including money in the bank, your physical assets and any investments that you might have, including superannuation, and also having a good look at what your cash flow looks like. And that is to say, what does your household income look like? And also, what are your expenses? Not just the fixed ones, but also the discretionary ones. How much in a typical year do you spend on various things? And that's really hard for people to answer off the top of their head. Unless they've done a bit of homework, prepared some kind of budget, they're not going to know the answer to that question. And we try to be pretty lenient on people. We don't expect people to have all of these answers, but we're working towards having all of that information.
If you've got a financial question for the guys, call now, 8223 0000. And it doesn't have to be about redundancy. I mean, end of financial year is just jumped over. So if you've got a question regarding that, might be super. It could be the fact that the mortgage rates have just, you know, the RBA has put the rates on hold, and you might have a question regarding maybe some investment properties and how that affects you. The guys are here to answer all your financial questions. What about JobKeeper? Can someone who is receiving JobKeeper be made redundant?
Yeah, technically anyone can be made redundant if their position no longer exists. I suspect a lot of employers will be holding off making any kind of decisions about redundancy until that JobKeeper ceases, because at the moment they're effectively getting paid to keep you on as an employee, even if you aren't currently working or even if you're being underemployed, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is certainly possible. For those people that are being made redundant, or those people, perhaps casual employees that have been stood down, there is the government benefit, which used to be called New Start Allowance, and these days it's called Job Seeker. And historically, that's required people to wait a period of time before getting onto that payment. So if someone took a redundancy package that included maybe 3 months' worth of pay, then they'd have to wait at least 3 months before getting onto that job seeker payment, or New Start Allowance, as it used to be called. That waiting period has currently been abolished in the current environment. So they said, look, we understand that things are tough out there. There's a lot of people going to be requiring that job seeker payment.
Mm.
They're not making you wait for that standard waiting period. So that is one positive. And the other positive about the job seeker is that they're still paying a bonus of $550 per fortnight on top of the standard job seeker payment, which really does really boost people's income if they find themselves in that position.
Are you finding a lot of people are using, a lot of employers are using this particular climate as an excuse to brush out their employers?
Look, I've not personally experienced that. I don't think any of us here at Goldsborough have personally experienced that in dealing with our clients and prospective clients. I would hope that employers, personally, I would hope employers aren't doing that. But it also provides an opportunity for some older employees to actually say, hey, maybe I need to sit and reassess my position, and do I retire now? Do I actually take advantage of things being a bit quiet at work, I'm going to get a payout or whatever it might be, and actually contemplate retirement? Those are the sorts of issues that as financial advisors we can also work through with folk is, you know, what's the right time for me to retire, or can I reassess my financial situation? Some employees would be talking with their employers about what's going to happen after JobKeeper stops, or if and when it stops, and what does that mean going forward? And so I guess my suspicion would be it's opening up an opportunity for a lot of dialogue between employees and employers that perhaps no one's ever been in a position to do or been really comfortable doing so.
And there'll be a lot of people that are in their late 50s, perhaps their early 60s. Perhaps it's before they might have intended to be fully retired. They are now contemplating whether they can afford to be retired,
yep,
or whether retirement, because it's not always black and white, Jade, of course. It's not always I'm working full-time and then I'm completely retired. For some people, retirement might mean a change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
It might mean a year out of the workforce. It might mean taking a break from full-time work, but intending to do either consulting-type work or casual employment further on down the track. So it's not always black and white between working and retirement. For a lot of people, it's going to be a shade of grey, and people don't always know what their financial position is going to be during that interim period, because obviously if people are searching for further work, then it's going to be very difficult to come by in the current environment. So that model of retirement just needs to be rethought, and people perhaps need to think a little more creatively about what retirement looks like for them individually.
100%. Shane from Surrey Downs has called in with a question regarding superannuation. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Jade and gentlemen. How are you going?
We're good. Great. Go ahead.
Good. Just a question. I've got, say I've got $60,000 in a term deposit at the moment, earning next to nothing. Should I put like most of that into my superannuation now, or wait until these things get a bit better? I don't plan on retiring for about another 7 or 10 years.
Look, the first question I would always ask someone in this situation, Shane, is what are the chances of you needing some or all of that $60,000 in the next 10 years? Because when you put money into superannuation, what's called the preservation rules apply. And that means that when money goes into super, you're not able to access it for a period of time until you meet what's called a condition of release, which is over preservation age and retired from the workforce. And that preservation age at the moment is 58. So that's the first question. When's the right time to invest? Well, in my opinion, any time is the right time to invest. What you've got to look at is how long am I investing for, and how much risk or volatility am I prepared to accept with the amount of money that I'm putting in? So, you know, if you were to look at where investment portfolios and markets are at the moment, there's an argument to say it's relatively low. So if you're investing now, fair chance your portfolio is going to grow over the next 5 to 10 years, but there's going to be some lumps and bumps along the way. How much of those lumps and bumps am I prepared to accept?
Okay. Yeah, I understand. And my other question is also, I go onto some of these smart money websites and put in, say, projection calculators. And it looks like when I want to contribute $300 after tax to my superannuation, in 10 years' time, the amount seems to be considerably higher in some cases than if I was to salary sacrifice that $300.
I can probably answer that. I think that, and you mentioned the Smart Money website, which is a government-based website, and I'd encourage people, if they haven't ever gone on and had a look at that site, it is very useful. It's got lots of good information and impartial information and some good calculators as well. What will be happening there, if you're doing a superannuation projection on that website and you're finding that the after-tax contributions grow your superannuation more than the before tax contributions, or the salary sacrifice, in other words.
I think the
answer to that will be that when you make a salary sacrifice contribution or any kind of contribution to super where you're claiming a tax deduction for it, the super fund's going to withhold 15% tax. Now, the benefit of salary sacrifice is that often the 15% tax that the super fund is taxing you is better than your personal tax rate, the tax that you would have to pay personally if you received that income yourself. Yep. But that 15% tax will reduce the overall growth rate on your superannuation over time, because, of course, that tax gets applied in the calculation. As soon as you put the money in, you put $1,000 in, for instance, you lose $150 straight away. So I think that's what will be happening in that calculator, so that it might artificially make those type of contributions look less effective than what they really are. Because as we know, salary sacrifice for a lot of people, particularly those people that have a reasonable working income, is a great way to boost superannuation.
Joined by our good friends from Goldsborough Financial Services, Lachlan Harvey and Brenton Meagle. If you've got a finance question, 8223 0000, or our text line is open 0448 08 1395, or you can flick Josh an email on air at 5AA.com.au. Gentlemen, we were just talking about super before, and I need to ask a question, a personal question. I've got all these super accounts, which I know I have spoken to you about so many times, and I've done nothing about it.
It was a while ago that we spoke about this.
Years ago, and I've done nothing about it, which is really bad. But what does that mean for me? Like, okay, so if I got onto this 3 years ago, like you dear things have offered, look, we'll do it for you, Jade. How have I been penalised now? What have I lost out on in the last 3 years?
Look, having multiple super funds is not the end of the world, and it's a very common thing. And I think there's always a bit of a running competition in the office with about how many different superannuation funds people have had, and I've certainly met people that have had more than 10 super funds going at any one given time.
Okay, I'm probably up there.
Yeah, okay, all right. look, even multiple accounts with the same super fund, which shouldn't happen, but it does happen. The major downside is that a lot of superannuation funds will have a requirement to offer a default level of insurance cover. Now, fees on superannuation can be pretty big, mm-hmm. but those fees are going to be much bigger if you've got multiple insurances being deducted out of multiple different accounts. So I think that is the biggest issue, is that not only is it hard to keep track of, it's hard to keep track of how much you're paying in terms of administrative fees and also insurance premiums. And it could well be that you've got some death cover with one superannuation fund, some disability cover with another super fund, and maybe some income protection with another fund. You might end up with more insurance cover than what you actually need, which is not such a bad thing if you actually need to claim on it. But in the meantime, you will be paying a large amount to be funding all of the premiums across the board. And they certainly don't get any cheaper as you get older. I know that there's a lot of people out there that will relate to this, that insurance premiums, whether it be through superannuation or outside of super, if it's life insurance, gee, it gets much, much more expensive the older we get. We really see it start to ramp up for those people that are in their 40s and 50s. That's something that we see all the time.
See, this is really stupid. I wouldn't have even known that there's insurances attached to my superannuation. That's how naive I am. You just tick a box and you think it's going to take care of yourself because, you know, you start a job in your 20s and then your 30s and then you hit your 40s and I'm now like, oh, I've got to start thinking about using my super really well now because I'm getting on.
Well, our view on this is that superannuation, for those people that are in their 30s and 40s, particularly those people that have got young families, the biggest benefit of having superannuation is not your retirement benefit, because that's going to be 30 or 20 years away. It's how much insurance cover you have in case things don't go according to plan.
And
it doesn't always go according to plan. We kind of assume that it will because that's what we imagine of our futures. But if you were to think around your peer group, Jade, and people that you know that are a similar age, I bet that you can think of someone that's had a major health event that's derailed their life plans.
Yeah,
and
true.
If you kind of think about your friendship groups and your people in your broader family, then I bet everyone can actually think of someone that's had that major health event. And that's what the insurance in super is there to do. It's there to provide you with an income or some capital relief if things just don't go according to plan.
So if I've got multiple accounts, how easy is it to roll into one and then get advice from you guys as to what the next step is? Because I wouldn't even know which one is the best for me.
And most people don't know the answer to that. And part of our role as advisors is to assess each of the different funds that you've got and try and understand the pros and cons of each of those funds and then make a recommendation for a particular fund that is going to suit your needs, whether it's for regular contributions, it's for the insurance cover that you've got. Yes, it's got to be cost effective. How's the fund in terms of the number of different investment options that are available? How much risk do you want to or not want to take? That's that volatility issue that we were talking about with Shane a while ago. So our role is to, I guess, get all of that information and talk it through with what you're wanting to achieve. If you like, wrap it up in the soccer ball, kick the soccer ball around and then come out with the right answer for you.
And if I can just add to that, part of the financial planner's responsibility, if there is going to be a recommendation to move, let's say, two super funds into one, that recommendation will be in writing with the reasons for that. And we always do a side-by-side comparison between the two super funds to show people what the costs and pros and cons of each individual fund are. So it's not just a verbal recommendation. It's always in writing and always backed up with evidence to say, look, this is the reason why we've made that recommendation.
And if we go back to our redundancy topic we were talking about before the break, redundancies are often an opportune time for people to sit down and go, oh, heck, I have got three different super funds. I thought I only had two. And so it offers an opportunity in a time of probably crisis in your working life and financial situation, but to actually reassess where you're at. And as professional advisors, we're able to sit and talk through not only the nuts and bolts, the dollars and cents of it all, but with the experience that we've got, be able to talk through some of the emotions that we've seen and how we've been able to help and watch clients move through what are some pretty difficult times, particularly when redundancy is on the table.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because 10 years of working at some place, you get, around the 12 weeks of payment. And you guys, I'm guessing, can really help. That's going to be a big stack of money that you could really help stretch a lot longer than 12 weeks, couldn't you? And make that money really work for you in a tough time.
Yeah, that's right. People will have the questions such as, should I use a redundancy payout in the leave that I get paid out? Should I use that to pay off debts? Mm. Should I make a super contribution? Should I put it in the bank account? And there are lots of options on the table, but we want people to think more creatively or more broadly and not just focus on the amount that they're getting paid out, but really what their financial planning looks like in the future years. And what I mean by that is to take a broad look at it and not exclude certain parts of their financial life, like superannuation and insurance and things like that. Because it's very difficult to answer the question about whether someone should invest that money without having an understanding about what the other areas are of their financial position, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Lachlan Harvey, Brenton Meagle, thank you very much for your wealth of information. And if you'd like to contact the guys at Goldsborough Financial Services, you certainly can, 8378 4000.